of far right and white supremacist, white power sentiments in the United States. And I believe that's George W. Bush.
Leaving, yep.
Also oversaw a period of incredible divisiveness in the United States, a further splitting of blue and red in the U.S. for his two terms.
Defined by the 9/11 attacks.
Defined by the 9/11, where you saw record unity quickly, mm-hmm. which quickly mm-hmm. dissolved into disunity. His legacy, I think, is still something that the United States is living with. We've seen, you know, FBI, law enforcement, they have for decades been saying militia groups, anti-government groups, far-right groups, white supremacist groups are a major terrorist threat, domestic terrorist threat to the United States. The difference is, and this is why symbols are so important and rhetoric is so important, they've never had a person in the White House or in any kind of leadership position who has such actively encouraged through their rhetoric.
And another president who also faced an impeachment, Bill Clinton.
And also incredible divisiveness at that period. I mean, partisanship is nothing new in the United States. The Clintons are by a large amount of Americans despised in political circles. So the partisanship we're seeing today, and there's Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, who also promised to bring the country together. And Barack Obama won huge majorities, was very successful electorally, two terms. And still, the divisiveness remained, the partisanship remained, because it was politically expedient.
And we saw, of course, Secretary of State, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, that, of course, also ran twice for President of the United States.
Like Joe Biden, someone who tried to be
to Donald Trump, and many of the things that she had, not predicted, but characterized in debates leading up to the election of former President Donald Trump, proved prophetic.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Donald Trump is maybe one of the most earnest and straightforward presidents the United States has ever had. It was no secret what he set out to do. He was very clear what he stood for, what he wanted. He, you know, because he was not a career politician or a polished politician, he really didn't know the levers of government and how government really works and what the role of the president is. He made no secret in his race baiting and talking about his views on immigrants. The Muslim ban, for example, which is something Joe Biden says he's going to repeal immediately.
Well, the banner is blocking it, but I think all the former presidents, the motorcade carrying all the former presidents who were in attendance, is leaving now. Yeah, that is correct.
A lot of black Cadillacs.
A lot of black Cadillacs. But interestingly, all the former presidents alive attended, except
Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter.
Due to his age.
Due to his age, yeah. And, of course, conspicuous by absence.
The most previous outgoing president, absolutely, breaking with 150-plus years of tradition, that one president hands off to the next president. And it's not like we haven't, as I've mentioned, it's not like the United States hasn't seen divisive times. I mean, remember 2000, George Bush was essentially installed as president by the Supreme Court because of how close the election was in Florida. And after a bitter, bitter political and legal battle between Al Gore and George Bush, even then, Al Gore conceded.
Conceded, yeah.
And Al Gore was present. He, of course, wasn't president, so it's a slightly different comparison. And George Bush had to try to heal the country. I believe in his first inaugural, he said something about, sometimes we feel like we're sharing a continent, but not a country. That was one of his big lines from his speech. So, and then again in 2004, when he was reelected, in 2008 with Barack Obama, again, another huge shift. I'll never forget when George W. Bush, after taking part in the inauguration, got on Marine One, as we saw Donald Trump do earlier in the day, took off, and people were cheering because they were so happy to see him gone. There are a lot of parallels to past inaugurations, past moments like this, where there's calls and hopes and aspirations for unity, but then realpolitik quickly takes hold. And there needs to be, again, if there's no political benefit. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to see any benefit in your electorally, mm-hmm. there's very little reason to reach across the aisle.
Okay, we're going to continue our conversation, William, in just a moment. I just want to welcome viewers that are just joining us. You're watching DW News live from Berlin. Joe Biden has been sworn in as president of the United States amid tight security in Washington, D.C. The crowd was limited because of the raging pandemic in the United States. Well, in his inaugural address, President Biden called for unity. He said there was much work to do, much to repair, and also spoke of the need to confront and defeat the threat of white supremacy. Donald Trump boycotted the event. He flew to his private resort in Florida early in the morning, and Vice President Mike Pence represented the outgoing administration. Well, later, Joe Biden will stop at Arlington National Cemetery to lay a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier before spending his first night in the White House as the 46th President of the United States. Well, as Joe Biden becomes U.S. president, the world is watching to see what kind of a country he will lead back into or onto the world stage. Well, 4 years of Trump's America First turned the idea of U.S. leadership on its head. His replacement first task will be to rebuild and reshape some crucial relationships.
Chaos in Washington. A pandemic out of control, an economy on the brink,
they do not get
a nation profoundly divided.
The U.S. has enough crises going on at home to take up the energy of any new president, but the rest of the world looks every bit as daunting.
China is now a rival superpower. Russia is openly hostile. And climate change threatens everything. Unveiling his foreign policy team, Joe Biden said he would tackle all these challenges by rejecting Trump's slogan of America First and reviving American leadership at the head of the Western Alliance.
America is back, ready to lead the world, not retreat from it, once again sit at the head of the table, ready to confront our adversaries and not reject our allies.
This new spirit from Biden is being warmly welcomed here in Berlin and in other capitals around Europe. And yet on this crucial issue of China, the Europeans have started doing their own thing.
The EU has just agreed a sweeping investment treaty with Beijing, ignoring requests from the Biden team to wait and work together. Angela Merkel herself was the driver of the deal, which will be a moneymaker for German companies. It's not a great omen for Biden's plan to hold a summit of democracies. He wants free societies to line up together to challenge China, seeing it as a growing threat to democracy everywhere. He'll want Europe fully on board.
It's difficult to imagine, for example, Germany choosing to side with China against the United States, because I have a hard time imagining Germans feeling comfortable being a partner to a government that has a million people in concentration camps.
European leaders do often condemn China over human rights abuses, but that rarely turns into action. And many are wary of being sucked into a long-term conflict between the US and Beijing.
The goal of Europeans is to maintain a good relationship with China on the one hand, because we need to work on many global issues together with China and we have mutual economic interests.
But any European hedging on this could expose the underlying tensions in the transatlantic relationship, which burst into the open under Donald Trump.
If Europeans believe that they can remain neutral in a growing rivalry between the United States and China and sort of have equally good relations with Beijing and Washington, and at the same time expect the United States to be the first responder whenever anything happens in Europe, I think they're living in a dream world, that's not going to be possible.
This was the heart of the crisis between the US and Europe during the Trump years. Trump scorned European allies as freeloaders, and that has shaken trust. Perhaps even permanently, because one day Trump or someone like him could be back.
Now, if Europeans look at the transatlantic alliance, there is a stronger degree of caution than there was before the Trump years, that Europeans need to build up their own resources and their own strategies to be able to act in a more independent way.
The death throes of the Trump administration have added to fears that the US has become fundamentally unstable, a power that allies can never again depend on in quite the same way.
Ultimately, that means that Biden's success or failure at home will profoundly affect what he can achieve abroad. He says America's back, but the rest of the world is asking, is it too broken to lead?
Richard Walker there reporting. William Gloucroft still with me here. Let's pick up where Richard left off. When Biden was asked what message he had for world leaders, he said America is back, but the world has moved on.
Yeah, and it's not going to go back to pre-Trump days, to 2016. I'm actually really, really fascinated to see how transatlantic relations are going to look. What's it going to look like when Biden or his Secretary of State comes to the EU to visit? Is he going to go to Brussels or Berlin or Paris? How they're going to handle the relationship with the United Kingdom now that it's outside the EU? And I think the most important caution is that while the tone and the symbolism is going to change, and there's going to be a lot more collaboration, a lot less combativeness in the kind of rhetoric we're going to hear from Joe Biden, that a lot of the policies are going to stay the same. Remember, Donald Trump's keep pushing NATO against the wall and kind of shaking them out for money. That began with Barack Obama. It was the Obama administration, led by Joe Biden, because he was such a big foreign policy guy, to get NATO members to start paying more their fair share. That 2% line that Donald Trump always talked about was a Barack Obama era policy. Same thing with tariffs with China, approach with Russia. I think a lot of these things that we saw under the Trump administration are going to continue again in a different framed in a different way, different kind of rhetoric, more trying to reach out, more less transactional, less zero sum. But the policy itself is really, I think, in a large part, going to stay the same.
So the tenor, if I understand correctly, is going to change. We expect that to change. But by and large, foreign policy will, in the first couple of months, remain the same. How, from the vantage point of this country, Germany, you know, you get the impression that they feel, you know, once bitten, twice shy type of sentiment. You know, reliability, predictability is something that culturally is very valued here. So how do you see them welcoming this new Biden administration?
Yeah, it's interesting that a country whose post-war sense of self is so framed by U.S. rules and values has come to such a different path, because Germany is so reliant on consensus politics between opposition and government, and the U.S. is a partisan mess, as we can see, and only has those two parties. And here you have more of the coalition kind of building to build consensus. I mean, I think Germany and the EU more widely is very much welcoming and ready to embrace a new administration. I think the EU, even someone like Emmanuel Macron, who wants to have a much more muscular European Union in the world, I think even someone like him acknowledges the limits of EU power, and even the ability or the desire for the EU to have power in the world, and that they need the United States in some way, shape, or form to be a partner. Again, not going back to that patronage kind of relationship. I think even the Biden administration wants to see a stronger, more muscular European Union, because the United States no longer wants to really be the policeman of the world, except, of course, when it meets their own interests, but doesn't want to sort out other countries' problems and wants other powers around the world to kind of keep their regions in check. And I think that's the kind of quilt of democracies, you can kind of, if you want to put it that way, that I think Biden is going to want to try to form with the European Union.
He is, of course, Biden is an old-fashioned, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, a traditional, let me put it that way, a traditional multilateralist. So, you know, is he a partner that they can work with? Is he the guy who can effectively repair alliances?
I think in the short run, yes. But the problem that we've been seeing in the United States for a long time, and we've heard about it, Oliver was just speaking about it, is how much gets done through executive action and executive orders. That has very little longevity. And how can you trust a country? And how can a country even know where it's going if every 4 years a new president comes into town and